What I've been hearing a lot in Tashkent for the past 3 weeks are the talks about these high expectations from the international community, specifically from the West and specifically from the European Union. And at times it seems to us, to the observers, that perhaps Uzbekistan is expecting too much. Maybe they want more than what the European Union can offer or wants to offer.
First of all, welcome to my office, and yes, it's a pleasure also to see you as a renowned journalist, and yes, and for the moment the only one from the outside accredited.
Hopefully there will be more.
Looking forward, including some European ones. But starting with the first part of your question, and what we expect of Uzbekistan, and I must say that we do not expect anything more than Uzbekistan subscribed itself to, starting from all those international conventions and treaties to which Uzbekistan is a part, as member of United Nations, as member of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. I mean, those are issues related to rule of law, to democratic freedoms, to human rights, and also to issues related to good neighborhood relations. And we see, and I must say, we see enormous progress in all of those issues. One could say, yes, about the economic system. I mean, this is a free choice of any country. What model of market economy to embrace? There could be a sort of completely sort of the free roller market economy, like probably United States and some other countries, and there are some which still pursue certain social elements. I wouldn't say so socialist, but elements of social responsibility within the market economy, which is more like the European model. So it's up to Uzbekistan to decide which to follow. But one thing is, once Uzbekistan subscribes to something, it's very important that it follows it.
For the longest time, what we heard from the EU were the set of recommendations to the Uzbek government. You know, Uzbekistan must do this, Uzbekistan should do this, Uzbekistan has to take this path. And now that narrative seems to have changed, because I'm listening to you and you pretty much want or wish the Uzbek government, the Uzbek people, to choose their own path, that the EU is there to support in any way it sees, you know, possible, obviously based on its own interests, but you're not pushing the regime or the system to do the kind of things, for example, you know, previously the EU wanted, right? I mean, please follow your international obligations when it comes to human rights. Please follow this path which will take you to more transparency, rule of law. I mean, rule of law and human rights were the mantra of the EU.
I mean, still it is. And this is exactly what I said. We are not expecting from Uzbekistan anything more than
that.
I mean,
you're promoting it has changed, though.
No, I would say the way how Uzbekistan is listening to our message has changed.
So Uzbekistan is changing.
Yes. The message is the same. And actually, when you see discussions going on in the European Parliament, yes, I mean, there is appreciation of enormous progress achieved. But of course, there is always added that, I mean, there is a long way still to go. And this is something which is also quite well understood by professionals in this area, including in Uzbek Parliament, in Ali Majlis, in the Senate, people within the government, people from the Ministry of Justice. They understand that what is done, those are probably indeed very important. I must say sometimes very bold steps taken. But that's just the beginning of the long road. And what we see, for example, with the cotton harvest, a sort of the, you know,
the
topic
leader.
And hot, very hot issue over last, 10, 12 years, with the enormous progress. But we see that probably for the first time over the last two and a half years, we have really honest discussion with the government. There is no more denial. Yes. I mean, first it was child labor, now forced labor. I mean, if one would say 3, 4, 5 years ago, there would be complete denial of the existence of the problem. Now we see people, including president, including the prime minister recently, commenting on those issues. And instead of denying the existence of the problem, actually actively seeking practical solutions.
What would you say to those? I know you've been here for 2 years, so you know the system. You are very active in Tashkent. What do you say to those who say, you know what, don't just be observers, the EU. Push the system to do more. Push the system to seize the momentum and accelerate the reforms. Because some critics see the United Nations and EU as just cheerleading the process. You know, you're not really committing to do much. You're happy with the way the government has been acting and, you know, the messaging from the system, but you're not necessarily pushing. Like, they want you to push for more change.
The big question would be, what do we consider by pushing?
Mm-hmm.
I think the times of the gunboat diplomacy, when you push another country to do this or that, I think is over. I mean, unless there is a major breach of, international peace and order, and then you have to employ, hard measures.
Those tools.
Yes, including international sanctions and things like that. I don't think that we should push anybody, that any government in the world should push any other government to do something. You can encourage, and you can encourage with positive message. So that if you do this or that, it will bring this or that positive consequence for you.
You're from Latvia,
yes,
a country which has had successful reforming experience, and I'm sure you get asked about that a lot here. Obviously, people know more about Latvia here than others' experiences in the European Union. What could Uzbekistan, both public and the government, learn from your experience? Both from mistakes and, I guess, success stories.
I would say one issue which is quite important and where we see that probably a sort of better concentration of effort is needed, and this is coordination. Coordination on how do you deal with international community, which is willing to assist Uzbekistan in its reform process. I mean, we are not going to come and to do something instead of Uzbek people.
Mm-hmm.
But we can assist. We are willing. And there is a need. And there is a need, including on passing on that knowledge that we gathered on various reforms. Probably developing necessary skills here in Uzbekistan to cope with the challenges of the modern world, with globalization, and of course, I mean, sometimes there is also a need to develop some very specific infrastructure to work with that. However, I must say that lack of money is not the major problem here. It's rather know-how. How to work with that money. How to make money to work. I mean, this is one of the major issues. And that concerns both the public and the private sector. With the public sector, yes, this is, issues related to absorption capacity for that international assistance which is readily available, starting from providing a list of priorities or prioritizing issues which should be tackled first, second, and so, and then looking for the best available external assistance. I'm not saying that we in the European Union can provide answers to all questions. No, not at all. I think there is a good deal to be learned from the United States, from Japan, from South Korea, from Singapore. I mean, even from Russia, why not? So it could be combined. And the next, when we speak about the private sector, is that unfortunately country for last 25 years lived in a sort of the isolation. So many businesses which were developed within the country, they were completely shielded from external competition.
Right.
Now they are going to be exposed. And in order to survive, they have to learn. They have to learn how to compete, to adopt best management practices. Yeah, in some practical skills, including marketing and things like that. I mean, and we are doing already. We had very successful management trading program here, which we run together with the Chamber of Commerce and Industry in all regions of Uzbekistan. We trained over 600 managers from small and medium-sized companies. More than 130 of those had their internships in EU companies.
And the European Union is still a major trade partner.
Yes, it's quite a significant one. We are, third, fourth place, depending on trade statistics.
And how much investment has come in, let's say, for the past 2 years?
Oh, it's difficult to say. It's still quite a small
much.
Amount. It's still quite a small amount. And of course, this is an issue of trust. This is an issue of trust because modern investments coming with latest technologies. And so those are considerable amounts of money. And people, before they commit that amount of money to a particular country, they want to be absolutely sure that their investment will be protected, that they will have an opportunity to actually expatriate their profits. And unfortunately, the track record of Uzbekistan over previous 20 or so years is not that good. And it will take some time to break this ice.
Mm-hmm. To build trust.
Exactly. Exactly. Of course, government is doing quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Those legal reforms undertaken are very important. Legislation to support businesses, to simplify tax rules, to actually simplify employment rules and things like that. Those are very important. But then, of course, the big question is whether those laws will be observed.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when we speak about the rule of law and how Uzbek courts in the past followed laws already adopted, I mean, again, I would say very uneven track record. And this is something, and of course, I mean, this information is spread amongst the investors. And it will take some time. Of course, being optimist by nature, I must say those who are coming now probably are going to gain more because, yes, high risks also brings high profits. So those who are like in the more adventurous types of business people, they are already coming. Or probably we may speak about some big multinationals with deep pockets who can come, and I see opportunities here.
Mm-hmm.
I see opportunities.
But looking at the bigger picture, if you're a policymaker in Brussels, and if you're looking at Uzbekistan from that vantage point, why would you care about this country or the region in general? What is the strategic importance of this area for the EU now?
The role that Uzbekistan and Central Asia is playing, I think is the best described by the very name, Central Asia. I mean, it's in the middle of Eurasian continent. And if something bad happens here, it's going to affect the entire continent. I mean, and this is absolutely clear to everybody. It's also, the region is exposed to a very, should I say, volatile neighborhood to the south. I mean, we have Afghanistan with ongoing war for, I mean, almost 40 years. I mean, this is something we must keep in mind. So, stability and prosperity of this region is extremely important. And what we see over the last 2 years, this is steady movement towards increased stability, towards good neighborly relations between countries of the region. Also, for growing prosperity, yes, stability, security, but also possibility to build connectivity within the region and between this region and adjacent regions on the continent. And here, if you look on the map of Central Asia, then of course the key piece of the puzzle, that's Uzbekistan, because if you take it out, then no connectivity is possible. And we already see that those developments which are taking place in Uzbekistan are positively affecting the situation in Tajikistan, which otherwise is almost isolated from the rest of the world. I mean, we see how it affects opportunities, business opportunities in Turkmenistan. We see how it affects economic development in southern Kazakhstan now. Bordering regions of Kyrgyzstan around the Fergana Valley. So it's a sort of the snowball effect going well beyond Uzbekistan's borders. So it is important, and it is important, and it's why European Union is going to support also regional projects, including connectivity, including easing border crossing, both for people and for goods, within the Central Asia and from Central Asia to the rest of the world.
Several years ago, when I interviewed the member of the European Parliament, and I don't quite remember his name, but he was from Great Britain, and he had just visited Uzbekistan, had a hard time engaging with the Uzbek officials. He called Uzbekistan a busted case. And this was about 10 years ago. I know your job is, you know, one part of it is, of course, engage the Uzbek political circles here, but then your other job is also to keep Brussels and the European Union in general informed about what's happening in Uzbekistan. I'm raising this point because has it gotten easier to explain Uzbekistan, or how has the narrative changed about Uzbekistan? How do you describe the country to your colleagues up in Europe? The changes here, you know?
I would say country, I arrived 2 years ago, almost day to day, and now those are two different countries.
Yes.
Especially you see it when you are living through what is happening here.
And listening,
indeed, and watching with your own eyes. I mean, without, you know, relying that much on the interpretation of, including very good journalists, I must say.
And also
but
on
still.
Expert news, perhaps.
Yes. I must say, those are two different countries. And also speaking on possibility to have meaningful dialogue with the government. I mean, it increased enormously. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are moving more and more away from a sort of the small talk, or just keeping to prescribed notes or things like that, towards, I mean, really lively discussions, bringing up the most difficult issues and not avoiding them. Of course, we're not using a sort of the what's sometimes called megaphone diplomacy, just exchange of official statements, you know, either blaming, yes, as somebody blaming, you know, one side, the other side is then, you know, sort of, you know, declining those accusations, things like that. No. I mean, we are discussing, but we are discussing as equal partners. And I think this is one of the most important issues. And it's not only us, European Union. What I hear from my colleagues, including from the U.S. ambassador and others, I mean, the level of discussion, the level of openness has changed enormously.
And that challenges you and other diplomats too, right? Because now you're dealing with the changing dynamics. You're dealing with a lot of unexpected developments, mm-hmm. positive, hopefully, mm-hmm. in many ways, but still, like, new challenges. And it obviously challenges us too as journalists, because the country's mm-hmm. changing, so we have to cover it differently, right? Is there I know the international community in Tashkent maybe is not as big or as wide as we want it to be, but is there an integrated, consolidated approach? How closely do you work with others in trying to shape your position on things?
Yes. At least what concerns reform process mm-hmm. and international support to it. We, on our side, together with the United Nations Development Program, mm-hmm. with Mr. Fraser, with the World Bank, Asian Development Bank, and some other major donors in this, we are setting up our own network, exchanging mm-hmm. information, aligning our positions as much as possible. Of course, we would like to see this process rather being run by the Uzbek government,
and this is mm-hmm.
yes, we also passed that message, mm-hmm. so that we would like to see the government much more involved in actually coordinating mm-hmm. international community here.
Some people here in Tashkent have described you as a new blood diplomat. They see you as a leader here, and they see you as an active listener. They like working with you, they've told me. And this is not just coming from the diplomats, but from other parts of the Uzbek government. And the question about the new blood in Uzbekistan, too, is asked a lot. In a place like Washington, for example, you know, do we have a new generation in Uzbekistan? Have they taken over? How much influence do they have on the process? What can they do? What would you say to those who are really curious about this?
I mean, one thing is don't judge about the young blood just from the from your age. I mean, you could be young in your soul.
True.
Even when you are almost 50, like I am. So I would say the young blood here in Uzbekistan, it's both. It's both generational, but it's also in terms of how people see the world and how they act. Whether they are used to be simply, executing somebody else's decisions and orders, or they are prepared also to take decisions on their own, appropriate level. Whether they are prepared to deliver their own opinion, to argue, even with their superiors. I mean, this is something that would make a major watershed between the older generation, which was used to this sort of the 100% top-down approach, and being sort of the risk-averse.
To this new generation, which is prepared to embrace the challenge, not just to face it, but actually to turn it around and make it into the sort of the major asset, mm-hmm. having this this possibility. So I would say yes, I see quite a lot of, one could say, yes, the new generation in terms of running this country, and both in public sector but also in private sector. Uzbekistan is full of hidden talent. I must say, the only problem until very recently was that, I mean, to show it wasn't always a good thing. To be successful probably was not that popular.
And to be modest was the modus operandi.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, of course, it's something which is based very much into the history of the civilization, which is very oriental in sense that in this typical farmers and citizens, yes, craftsmen society, which goes back, I mean, for millennia, this sort of the living together and the common good was always placed higher than individual freedom. So, to blend in, not to stick out, was sort of the golden rule. And this is very much, if you look at other Oriental societies like Chinese or Japanese, I mean, this is quite typical.
Mm-hmm.
So, now we see some elements of this... one could say, yes, Western influence, European influence, Anglo-Saxon influence of, you know, that success is something which should be celebrated and should not be hidden.
Right. And discussed about.
And discussed about. Because success stories, they shall serve as inspiration to others to go beyond the idea. The usual, beyond the average. I see that those are appearing here. And we see that they are finally, you see that they are, you know, really made public, that they are promoted. And this is a good thing. At the same time, I hope that the best elements of the traditional Oriental approach, which is the close-knit family relations, the system of neighborhood support, that they will stay, that they will not disappear. But on top of that, having those success stories is very important. And why? Because indeed, this is a matter of surviving in globalized world. I mean, you need champions, national champions, to get your country forward.
And they need to come, you not only need to produce them, but they need to be able to come out and see who they are.
Exactly.
And show their faces, yeah, and be known, and it's okay, right?
They should not be afraid.
You know, I really meant it when I said at the beginning that we not only did not have access to the Uzbek political circles, but also to the international community in Tashkent, because whenever we wanted interviews, even, you know, remotely, we would get answers like, you know, things are very sensitive here, like we don't want to talk. And I heard that many times from the EU diplomats too. So I know things have changed because I'm here in your office face to face with you asking all these questions, and I really, really appreciate your candid responses. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.